Welcome back, everybody. We're diving into some fascinating stuff today. We're going to be looking at the Book of Proverbs, specifically some ideas about wisdom from a lecture by Dr. Knut Heim. He uses this really interesting modern metaphor theory to explain how wisdom is actually personified in these ancient texts. It's like wisdom takes on a character all its own.
It's fascinating, isn't it? You know, what's really cool about Dr. Heim's approach is that he goes beyond that old idea of metaphors just being like lenses that we look through.
You just use them and toss them aside.
Right. It's so much more dynamic than that. He compares metaphors to trends of thought, you know?
Yeah.
Each one taking us on this unique journey to understanding. We get to choose which train to board, how far we want to go, and when to hop off.
I love that. I love that analogy. It really makes exploring these texts so much more like active and engaging. So how does this this train of thought approach help us understand wisdom in Proverbs specifically?
Well, it's in chapter 7, 8, 9 where this personified wisdom really comes alive. Instead of just talking about wisdom, Proverbs presents wisdom as a figure, almost like a being with certain qualities and actions.
Okay, so wisdom isn't just like a concept,
right?
It's a character in the story.
Exactly. And the way we're introduced to this character, it's really something. Chapter 7 uses language that we might, you know, expect in family relationships, even romantic ones, to describe our connection to wisdom.
Wait, romantic? That's not what comes to mind when I think wisdom.
Right. It's a bit of a surprise, but there it is, you know.
Good.
Proverbs 7.45. It urges us to, and I quote, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend." Dr. Heim points out that in ancient love poetry, like the Song of Songs, sister was actually a term of endearment. We even see this in Egyptian love songs of the time.
Wow. So are we supposed to have this close, almost intimate relationship with wisdom? Then it's not just knowing facts or making good choices. It's more than that.
That's what's so compelling about this personification, you see. Dr. Heim argues that the specific type of relationship, it's crucial. It's not about like hierarchy or obedience. It's about this egalitarian connection, you know, similar to the bonds we have with our closest friends or family, which really makes wisdom feel relatable, something we can aspire to connect with on a personal level.
Yeah, that's much more inviting than just trying to be wise. It's more about building a relationship. But this idea of personal connection, it gets even more intense in chapter 8. Right?
Absolutely. Chapter 8, we get wisdom's longest and most impressive speech in the entire book. And what's fascinating is that Dr. Heim draws this parallel between this speech and ancient hymns, where deities would actually praise themselves.
So by giving wisdom this big self-praising speech, the text is kind of elevating her to a divine level.
That's one way to look at it. And then you have this incredibly debated verse, Proverbs 8.22, where wisdom says, the Lord created me. And the Hebrew word for created here is kwena. And it's a tricky one because it can mean so many things.
Yeah, it can be begotten, acquired, possessed,
right?
Even brought forth. So that opens up a lot of different ways to think about wisdom's origins.
Exactly. And I do kind of wonder if, you know, maybe the ambiguity isn't intentional, just reflecting the limitations of human language at the time, rather than some grand literary device.
That's a good point. Maybe we are reading too much into it.
Maybe.
But regardless of how we translate kwena, this verse really makes us think about the mystery of wisdom's nature.
It does. And it really ties back to that whole idea of metaphors as trains of thought. We're not supposed to just find a simple answer and be done with it. You know, we're being invited to engage with the mystery, to explore these different possibilities and see where they take us.
Yeah, I'm starting to see how this approach can really deepen our understanding. It's not just what the text says. It's about how it makes us think.
Exactly. And one of the things it makes us think about is wisdom's connection to humanity. Proverbs 8.31 specifically talks about wisdom delighting in the sons of man. So it's not just some abstract cosmic order. It's about genuine care for human beings.
So we're going beyond this image of wisdom as this cold, distant force. She's actually invested in our well-being.
That's what's so remarkable. And that's where the motivational aspect comes in. You know, if wisdom cares for us, then seeking wisdom becomes more than just a good idea. It's almost like responding to her care.
I see what you mean. It's like she's extending a hand, inviting us into this deeper relationship.
Exactly. And in chapter 9, that invitation takes a very concrete form. We get this vivid image of wisdom building a house with seven pillars. and preparing a lavish banquet.
Okay, hold on. A house with seven pillars. It's got to be symbolic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Seven pops up all over Proverbs and the Bible in general.
Absolutely. And there are so many interpretations of those pillars. Dr. Heim sees it as a metaphor for the whole book of Proverbs. The house is the framework. The banquet is all the teachings inside. But there are others, you know, some connecting it to the seven planets that were known at the time, others to the seven sacraments of the church, and some even more outlandish.
Wow. So even the imagery itself is like one of those trains of thought leading to all these different ideas. We're not just passively taking in information. We're being challenged to actively interpret and make connections.
Exactly. And at the heart of it all is this invitation to partake in the banquet, to experience the richness and abundance of wisdom firsthand.
So we're not just supposed to like admire wisdom from afar, but to engage with her, like we're building a relationship.
That's a fantastic way to put it. And this brings us to one of the most thought-provoking points Dr. Heim raises. If wisdom is being portrayed with these almost divine qualities, how does that change what it means to be wise as humans? Like, are we meant to embody something of this ground figure, you know, in our own lives?
That's a big question, right? I mean, we've been talking about wisdom as this almost otherworldly being existing before creation, but are we supposed to, like, become that?
It's definitely something to think about. And it gets even more interesting when we look at Dr. Heim's analysis of Proverbs 8.30, where wisdom describes being beside the Lord during creation. And the Hebrew word used there, amenon, it's a really difficult word to translate definitively.
It really is. Yeah, it could mean faithful, a craftsman, even nursling. I mean, each translation gives us this drastically different picture of wisdom's role in creation.
Exactly. And here's where I think Dr. Heim's focus on metaphor really comes into play. He points out that most scholars get stuck trying to pick one definitive meaning for a man, and then they build their entire interpretation around it.
So instead of asking, like, what does emen really mean, we should be asking, what does this ambiguity tell us about wisdom?
Precisely. You know, maybe the ambiguity is the point. Maybe it's highlighting this complex and multifaceted nature of wisdom. She can't be easily categorized or defined. She's powerful, but she's also playful, ancient and ever present.
Maybe that complexity is what we're supposed to aim for in our own pursuit of wisdom. It's not about finding the one right answer, but embracing those many layers and nuances.
I think that's a very insightful observation. After all, Proverbs isn't just some list of rules or sayings. It's an invitation to a lifelong journey of learning and growth.
And like any good journey, there are going to be twists and turns, you know, moments of clarity and moments of confusion. And maybe those moments of confusion are where the real learning happens.
I love that. Embracing the mystery, the ambiguity as part of the process. It's a very proverbial approach, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And speaking of journeys, Dr. Heim also points out the way chapter 8 transitions into chapter 9. It's like wisdom is taking us on this literal journey from the city gates to her house, where we encounter that that striking image of the banquet.
Right. And it's not just some random detail. It's a combination of everything we've learned about wisdom so far. You know, she's not just telling us about wisdom. She's inviting us to experience it firsthand.
And that experience, as Dr. Heim emphasizes, is multisensory. We've got food, drink, even music. It's a full-on celebration of knowledge.
It really is. And the banquet is a brilliant metaphor on so many levels.
All right.
First of all, it highlights the abundance and richness of wisdom. It's not some scarce commodity.
Yeah.
There's plenty for anyone who wants it.
And second, it really emphasizes the communal aspect of wisdom. We're not supposed to hoard it, you know. It's meant to be shared and enjoyed with others, kind of like what we're doing here.
Exactly. We're bringing together insights and perspectives from different sources to give you, the listener, a richer and more satisfying understanding.
Speaking of different perspectives, there's that whole debate about the seven pillars of wisdom's house in chapter 9.
Oh, yeah, those seven pillars.
It's a detail that has sparked so many different interpretations for centuries.
Surely has.
Dr. Heim mentions some connecting it to the seven planets or the seven sacraments of the church. Some are definitely more outlandish than others, but it's amazing how this one image has like captured people's imaginations for so long.
Well, I see how Dr. Heim connects the banquet to the book of Proverbs as a whole. You know, I wonder if maybe it could also represent the individual's journey toward wisdom. Each pillar could symbolize a different stage or aspect of that journey.
Hmm. That's an interesting thought. It adds another layer to the metaphor. And even if we dismiss some of those interpretations as a bit far-fetched, the text is deliberately using the number seven.
It's a number that's just loaded with symbolism. Even if we can't pin down what it means, you know, in this specific context, maybe it's not meant to have just one single meaning.
Yeah. Maybe it's meant to give us this sense of completeness, wholeness of the many different sides of wisdom itself.
Exactly. And that ties back to what we were talking about earlier about how we are meant to embody wisdom. It's not about finding that one perfect answer, but embracing complexity, being open to multiple perspectives.
Like we're being challenged to become our own houses of wisdom, you know, with these different pillars that support our understanding of the world.
I love that image. And it gets even more interesting when we consider the social dynamics at play in this banquet scene. It's not just wisdom sitting there by herself, you know. She's got these servant girls going out and inviting people to join her.
Yeah, and Dr. Heim points out that this has kind of puzzled some scholars, you know. In ancient Near Eastern culture, it was considered very unusual for a woman, even a queen, to personally invite male guests to a feast.
So why is wisdom doing it here? It seems like a very deliberate choice.
Well, Dr. Heim suggests that these servant girls represent all those people in society who encourage the younger generation to seek wisdom, parents, teachers, mentors, anyone who embodies those values and encourages others to do the same.
So it's not just about wisdom herself. It's about the whole community supporting the pursuit of knowledge. But there's another layer to this that I find particularly fascinating. Dr. Heim points out that the way these servant girls are described, you know, especially in contrast to the strange woman in Proverbs 7, it evokes a very specific image.
You mean the woman who tries to lure men into a life of folly and reckless living?
Exactly. He argues that the servant girls represent a certain ideal of femininity, women who are themselves wise and virtuous and who are drawn to men who share those qualities.
So it's like, wisdom is saying, if you want to attract a wise partner, you need to be wise too.
Precisely. It's a pretty brilliant motivational strategy, wouldn't you say?
It really adds a whole new dimension to this whole idea of seeking wisdom. It's not just about personal fulfillment or success. It's about attracting the right kind of people into your life.
And that, I think, is one of the most profound takeaways from Proverbs. Wisdom isn't just a set of abstract principles. It's a way of life that shapes our relationships, our choices, and ultimately our destiny.
Yeah, it really makes you think about like who you spend your time with, the kind of person you want to be.
It does.
You know, it's a good reminder that those wise and supportive people around you, they can have a big impact on your own journey.
Huge impact. And it brings us back to Dr. Heim's analysis of that tricky Hebrew word, kana, the one used to describe wisdom's creation in Proverbs 8.22. Remember, it can be translated in so many ways. Created, begotten, mm-hmm. acquired, even possessed.
Yeah, and Dr. Heim thinks that this ambiguity, it wasn't an accident.
Right.
It was a deliberate choice by the author.
Exactly. He's suggesting that the text is like intentionally playing with those different meanings at the same time, inviting us to consider all these different facets of wisdom's nature.
So on the one hand, we have wisdom presented as this eternal, almost divine being. But on the other, it's something we can, you know, learn, something we can develop within ourselves.
Exactly. And that tension, that paradox, is really at the heart of what makes the pursuit of wisdom so, so compelling. You know, it's both this transcendent thing, existing beyond our grasp, but also imminent, something we can cultivate within ourselves.
Yeah, it's like we're called to participate in something so much bigger than ourselves, but also like recognizing the potential for wisdom within each of us.
Beautifully put. And I think it really captures the essence of what Proverbs is trying to teach us. Wisdom isn't a destination, you know, some final point we reach. It's an ongoing journey of discovery and growth.
So if we were to like sum up our deep dive into Proverbs and this personification of wisdom, what are those key takeaways you want listeners to walk away with?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that wisdom isn't just a concept. You know, it's presented as this dynamic force, this being that we can interact with, learn from, and even, you know, strive to embody.
It's about fostering that that relationship with wisdom, not just as individuals, but as a community.
Yes.
Supporting each other in this pursuit of knowledge and understanding.
Exactly. And building that relationship, it takes effort,
attentiveness,
a willingness to embrace that mystery and complexity. of life and the world around us.
And it also means, like, questioning our own assumptions, our own biases, and being open to new perspectives, right?
Absolutely.
We can all learn from each other's experiences, each other's insights.
It's true. The pursuit of wisdom. It's a lifelong endeavor. It's not about reaching some final destination. It's about the journey and who we become along the way.
Well said. You know, as we continue on this journey, I can't help but think of those words in Proverbs 9.10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding.
That's a good one. A powerful reminder that wisdom goes beyond just acquiring knowledge. It's about, you know, aligning ourselves with something greater, seeking a deeper understanding of life's purpose and meaning.
This has been such a rich and thought-provoking exploration. And I feel like, honestly, we've only just scratched the surface of what Proverbs has to offer.
It's true. There's always more to discover. But for now, I think we'll wrap up our deep dive into Proverbs and the personification of wisdom.
A huge thank you to all of you for joining us on this journey. We hope you've learned some valuable insights and maybe even rediscovered that sense of wonder about the very nature of wisdom.
Keep seeking, keep questioning,
yeah,
and keep feasting on that banquet of knowledge that's spread out before you.